This is an ABC podcast.
Imagine this. You live on an island that's been split in two by a 500-kilometre long and winding border. And for more than 30 years, it was a border complete with armed checkpoints and controls. For generations of Irish, the physical boundary which divides the Republic in the south with British-ruled Northern Ireland is a symbol of centuries-old division. And for the townspeople who lived along that border, it meant 30 years of animosity and violence, known as the Troubles. Hi, Miyuki Okiranta, and on Earshot, we're going on a road journey along Ireland's border, which today is most striking for its absence. In 1998, when the Good Friday Peace Agreement was brokered, the old hard border ceased to exist, and for the past two decades, it's been possible to cross between the Republic and Northern Ireland without even knowing it.
I think Brexit, the British government has completely got it completely wrong as far as we're concerned. In Northern Ireland, we voted to stay in Europe as a majority here, and that right's been taken away from us.
But like the traces of an old scar, the border is about to be re-scored into the landscape. The United Kingdom voted to leave the European Union in the 2016 Brexit referendum, and Britain's departure is looming. The lush Irish country along the borderline will soon become an EU frontier, and with it comes the spectre of customs, barriers, checkpoints, and the fear that the hard-won peace of the past two decades will be torn apart. Amid all the talk around Brexit, the voices of the Irish people who live and work along that border have been strangely absent.
How are you, John?
Good to see you. It's good to see you, Peter. It's been such a long time.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this trip.
Yeah, it's going to be great. We've got a lot of driving in front of us, so let's get going.
So a couple of months ago, writers and friends Peter Gagan and John Connell decided to seek out the stories of people from both sides of the line. And perhaps most surprisingly of all, where the question of Irish reunification appears like a glimmer on the far horizon.
My old friend John Connell and I grew up only about 35 miles south of the border that separates Northern Ireland and the Irish Republic. During the 30 years of the conflict in Northern Ireland, what we call the Troubles, we seldom crossed a heavily fortified frontier. But thanks to the Good Friday Agreement and European Union membership, there's been peace for 20 years and there's an open border. But that could be about to change because of Brexit.
Continue on Dublin Road for 1 mile.
So we've just taken our first pit stop. We've come across the border and we're in Enniskillen, which is a medium-sized town in Northern Ireland. I suppose what's made us stop is there is a whole lot of Union Jacks and also Ulster flags for the flag of Northern Ireland. Now, they would be associated with the Unionist community. I suppose what's really interesting is I actually was on this road a few weeks ago, Peter, and none of these flags were up. They're all up because of the 12th of July, which is marching season. So that's a very interesting thing. And there's another flag that we're both looking at here, which has some sort of an eagle on it, and we assume it must be a British Army regiment, because we're in Britain. I like Enniskillen a lot. It's a really nice open place. It's very tourist friendly. It's a town that's changed tremendously since the peace process. But I suppose seeing the regiment flags here today and the Union Jacks, I'm reminded that we're still in Northern Ireland and that there are still are some views that don't change even over the course of 20 years of peace.
It's interesting too for me. You know, we've just come over the border here to Enniskillen. Northern Ireland, it's the first time it really feels like I'm in a different place to where I'm from.
Yeah. Growing up, when you came into the north from the Republic, you always felt like I'm an outsider. That's changed a lot in the intervening years of the peace process. But days like today, when you see the flags, you go, okay. It's just a little reality check, just a gentle reminder that this part of Ireland is not the Republic and it's not your country.
In communities along the winding 500-kilometre border, Brexit is stirring up old wounds.
To keep the UK and Northern Ireland in the EU customs union,
They fear a return to physical border checks.
So we're back on the road again, and we're on our way to meet Adrian Grant, a historian and writer who's going to be able to tell us all about the history of the border itself.
Adrian Grant, lecturer in policy at Ulster University.
So Adrian, we're here on the border. We're going to take a little bit of a spin. You're going to show us some of the places where there used to be customs points and things like that that were here on the border between Derry and Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. So let's get in the car with us and have a little bit of a spin.
Okay. Yeah, well, they didn't really put it out like that, but that's basically
it. So we're coming up.
To the border. As you've probably seen when you crossed it a couple of times already, the only thing that's different is the speed limit's changed in miles as you cross into Northern Ireland, and the road markings change from sort of yellow to white here. And that's it.
You might tell us a little bit about your memories of, I suppose, the checkpoint border when you were a young child.
Where we're approaching now is open fields, trees, and a pub. But at that time, it was fully militarized, dark green tin watchtowers, and then there would have been soldiers here, fully weaponized. You would have been stopped, asked your name, license, all the rest, without fail. There was nobody was allowed to drive through at all. You stopped every time. If you take a right here now, we can turn around. Yeah. So this entire area here would have been the checkpoint.
Wow.
And then there was a point as well where your car could be searched more thoroughly if you were under suspicion. Or this pub here was bombed on numerous occasions.
By both sides or?
No, just by the Republicans.
For the listener who may not know about the border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, what's it all about?
Well, I mean, Ulster always has been different. Ever since the Ulster plantation, there's been a different culture and identity here. Basically, due to the sort of colonisation of this area, lots of Scottish and English Presbyterian planters would have come here in the 17th century. And that changed the dynamic here. But it was never really an issue until a demand for self-government for Ireland became more prominent in the late 19th century. Simply put, when that became almost inevitable in around 1912 to 1914, the issue of how do you deal with Ulster became more prominent. So Ulster Protestants, Ulster Unionists began to say that they, rather than opposing Irish self-government for the entire island of Ireland, they proposed, and others began to propose, that a solution to this may be to create a border and treat Ulster separately. And then this is where the issue really came from. So there was lots of political wranglings throughout the 1910s. Obviously, you had a world war in there as well, but the Irish War of Independence brought things to a head. And so the treaty between Britain and Ireland at the end of the War of Independence. And what happened there was 26 counties of Ireland became self-governing under the Dublin rule, and then another 6 counties in the northeast came under the rule from Belfast, which was Ulster Unionist rule. So this is where the border really comes from, and it's been a prominent part of life ever since. But I would be of the opinion, I think, that most British politicians don't quite get it. Maybe even most Irish politicians don't quite get it. I think the only people who get it are the people who live here and have spent their whole lives here. Because you can do a visit to the border, as many European politicians have done, as many British politicians have done, and say, oh, I understand now, I can see how the border looks, how it feels, and what it means. But you actually have to live here and experience what it's like to be in a cross-border economy, a cross-border social situation, have family members on both sides of the border. And the other big thing in terms of that is the currency fluctuation between the euro and the British pound. So after the referendum, the value of pound sterling fell by about 20 to 25%. So if you get paid in sterling and your life is really in euros, so your mortgage, your rent, your bills, your shopping, whatever, is mostly in euros, then your real income has just fallen by about 20%. And that's a huge shock.
we're just coming into Derry, which is going to be our first major stop on our tour of the border. We can see, we're looking down from a beautiful height into the lake, Loch Foyle, and one half of the lake is in the United Kingdom, and the other half, if you can just see across very clearly, is in the Republic of Ireland. You can see County Donegal on the other side, and it's this beautiful, beautiful kind of green fields in the distance. And this is one of the kind of the big border crossings in the island of Ireland. It's from the city of Derry into Donegal in the Irish Republic, and a lot of people will take this road every day into work in Derry and back out into the Irish Republic.
In 1.5 kilometres, take the exit on the left.
To find out more about what life is like on the border, we journey into a working class neighbourhood in Derry.
Hello.
This city witnessed a lot of violence during the conflict. Most of the residents here come from an Irish nationalist background. More than 80% of Derry voted to stay in the European Union during the Brexit referendum. We have come to meet a local women's group whose members hail from both sides of the border.
We're here from...
Are you the journalists?
We're the journalists and you're the beautiful women.
No, thank you. You're on a winner straight away.
Hello, my name's Margaret Stewart and I'm the chairperson of Gaelic Women's Group.
My name's Rosie Doherty and I'm the coordinator with Gaelic Women's Group.
I'm Regan Lesbian, I'm a volunteer at Gaelic Women's Group.
Just first, ladies, Gaelic Women's Group, what's the background to it? What's it all about?
Well, there was a big need for single parents and young mothers and to have somewhere to go to and social out as well. We started in about 1995. And actually meeting in each other's houses because we've seen a need in the area for training and education. And then the housing executive gave us a flat over in the street here. And we outgrew that because we had so many women coming into us. And now we've actually outgrown this place as well. So we're currently waiting on a new centre.
And we, as a group here, we are a voluntary organisation and we're a non-political group. And we don't affiliate to any parties. Because we're a non-affiliate group, we do ourselves out a lot of money. And, you know, we're not going to change that anyway for nobody.
We're not far from the border here as we sit, are we? We're in County Derry in Northern Ireland, but we're not far from
Well, I actually timed it. I live just over the border in Muff and I'm 6 minutes exactly in my car from my house. Yeah.
There's a lady here and she doesn't even know where the border is. We're here a year, so we know what it is. What's going to happen? We don't know. I'm very worried personally because, as I say, we don't know what's going to happen here. To us, going up and down the border years and years, it was just you get through. Now, are you going to get checked? Are you going to get bags open? What do they intend to do with the border? Because as far as I really can see, they haven't a clue. It's a line in the road and we cross it. That's it. We're used to doing that. But to start up checkpoints and such now would be very difficult.
But I think Brexit, the British government has completely got it completely wrong as far as we're concerned. In Northern Ireland, we voted to stay in Europe as a majority here. And now we have taken that right's been taken away from us. So we have no rights, really. So we have to go by what they say over there. So that's wrong, because the people here have a right to be listened to, because we've gone through enough.
Is there much opportunities and work and things like that in Derry? Like, what's it been like in Derry for the 20 years after the agreement?
No,
not really, no. Derry doesn't seem to have got anything. I know Belfast, all you ever hear is 100 new employees for this thing and that thing. But in Derry, there's very little. And there's very little hope for the, will it be my grandchildren in the future? Where are they going to get a job? Are they going to have to leave Derry? Because definitely I don't see much employment in it.
I have 2 sons and the two of them had to work away. They couldn't get a job in the north. One of them started in Dublin and the Arbor, the other he worked in Holland. And they're still doing it. Like, there's some of them still travelling to work.
Uh-huh. So that was the women's group. We're going to head over now to meet Brian Docherty, who represents the Protestant Marching Band groups. The Marching Bands, of course, the Orange Order March on the 12th of July. So he, I'm sure, will have lots to tell us about Derry, the border, and, of course, Brexit. So let's see what he's got to say.
Derry people talk about themselves as being kind of a double minority. You know, they feel peripheral to Belfast and they feel peripheral to Dublin. Whereas as a Protestant growing up in the city, we quadruple minority. We're peripheral to Belfast, peripheral to Dublin, peripheral to Europe, but also peripheral within the city of Derry itself.
Brian Docherty is part of the Loyalist Bands Forum, a group representing marching bands from the Orange Order and other Protestant fraternal organisations. He believes that Brexit has been seized on by people who oppose a British identity in Northern Ireland, stirring up old tensions.
The whole Brexit debate has been, unfortunately, kind of overrun by opportunism, you know, particularly political opportunism. The only thing that's been consistent through this whole debate has been the fact that Unionists, Nationalists, Republicans and others have, no one has said they want a hard border. You know, it's the only thing that they've kind of agreed on. And unfortunately, and ironically, it has been largely the political commentators, media commentators, and even people who should have been pragmatic and balanced, like kind of business leaders and policy makers, who seem to have used either for political gain or personal gain, and have taken it in a direction that's actually creating tension. I mean, you referred to the flags that you see in the fountain at the moment. Okay, there are reflective of the marching season, but there's been a re-emergence of kind of soft loyalism or kind of soft paramilitarism. And a lot of that has been because of the fact that for the last 3 years, every time a Protestant opens a newspaper or turns on a TV, they are inundated with anti-British sentiment. It's coming from global media, it's coming from European media, it's coming from national media. It's been Brit bashing season, and that has frustrated a lot of Protestants in that respect. Protestants generally, I know that people may disagree, but Protestants generally aren't that aggressive. They, particularly in Derry here, there's a kind of sense of, well, we've been a minority for so long, we just kind of keep our head down and get on with it. But you sort of get to a point where if you poke someone enough, they'll start to get angry, and you're starting to see that. I mean, the hard border or the prospect of leaving Europe, I don't think had any real threat to the peace process or to reinstigating the violence. But I think the attitude, the public attitude and this anti-British sentiment has kind of created that. Now it's almost as if in this day of kind of political correctness that you're grand unless you're a white male. And if you're a white male and happen to be Protestant, you really are, you're just kind of one rung above bankers, you know. And people are starting to feel that and get angry about it. And there's an underlying kind of growth now and maybe more sinister loyalism. What hasn't been kind of portrayed enough, in my opinion, is the dynamic under the whole Remain-Leave debate. All those kind of stakeholders or protagonists that I mentioned kind of have tended to group people into one kind of binary category or the other. The Protestants are the narrow-minded bigots, the racists, and the Catholics are the liberal progressives, you know, and whereas if you scratch onto the surface, it's very, very different.
So the landscape has changed a lot, Peter, 50 miles from Derry. We're moving away from, I suppose, those open plains and hills to real rolling countryside.
In this landscape, you have a lot of placards everywhere as well. Let's say, no hard border. They're kind of tied up to the trees as we pass by. And we've also just passed a pub called the Smuggler's Inn, which I think gives a bit of a hint of some of the history of this landscape.
Yeah, I mean, you know, smuggling was such a big industry here in the Troubles and before. Hopefully it's not as big now, but wherever there's a border, there's going to be people who want to take advantage of it.
And that's true. And we're just on our way now to a very famous border town that has a bit of an interesting history itself.
Yeah, Belcoo, Black Lion, you know, it's a well-known place, and I'm really excited to get there because not only is it a famous little place, but it's also a culinary capital of Ireland now. A famous chef lives there, so who knows, we might get fed as well.
We've just arrived in the village of Black Line Belcoo, which literally straddles the border. The northern end is called Belcoo, the southern end is called Black Line, and this village, back during the Troubles, there's three roads into the village. Back during the Troubles, one of the roads was bombed out, the other road was a customs point, and we're going to talk about how business is doing and what might happen with Brexit.
All right, let's go.
Here's a man here all the way from Swanland Bar on the border.
How are you there, Peter Dagan? How are you doing?
Further up the street in Black Line, we meet Desi McManus, who spends his days delivering fruit and veg across both sides of the frontier. He is fed up with Brexit uncertainty.
A year ago, people were more concerned and worried all the time what was going to happen. It's just dragging on and dragging on, and nobody really knows.
And what will it mean for you? You're from a border town yourself as well.
If there's going to be a hard border and checks, it's going to be very inconvenient, and inevitably it'll lead to trouble, because people are not going to accept a border again in Ireland. They're not just going to accept it. People have got used to the freedom of movement, I suppose you could say, around the border areas without any sort of an impediment, and they're not going to stand for sort of a border imposed right down the middle of the country. Them days are gone. In my mid-50s now, so I've been through it all with the Troubles and everything. And there's a dynamic for United Ireland. It has started, you know. I think the dynamic is that going that way.
Thank you very much for your time.
We only had our new Prime Minister for 24 hours. It's absolutely amazing. But
our mission is to deliver Brexit on the 31st of October. And making this country...
Brexit may come up. I obviously attach huge importance to the letter, the spirit of the Belfast Good Friday Agreement.
So if Boris Johnson does the wrong thing by citizens here in the north, if he does the wrong thing by Ireland, he is doing it with his eyes wide open.
In 300 metres, take the exit on the left. Then take the...
So we're about 250 kilometres into our border trip. And we're now on the Monaghan border. But this stretch of road is particularly interesting because it actually crisscrosses the border about 5 to 6 times within the space of about 5 minutes. I don't know how this stretch of road was policed during the time. We just crossed the border. Google Maps have told me we've crossed the border. You wouldn't know. You can hear the interactive map here talking. We're now in Fermanagh, but we're actually going to pass again over the border. So to our left of the road is actually Northern Ireland, and to my right of the road is the Republic. It's totally invisible. Google Maps is able to tell me, but other than that, I wouldn't have a clue. So we're on the way into Cross Madeleine in South Armagh. Cross Madeleine, it's very close to the border, and I suppose it's famous for a lot of the wrong reasons, but it was a real hot spot in the Troubles. It's a very different, quieter community now. It's a lovely town with a very vibrant sporting community. So we're going to go in and I suppose talk to people and find out what their views on Brexit are in such a famous place.
We're just here in Cross Madeleine.
In a noisy Cross Madeleine.
And we're going to go for a bit of a walk around town and to see who we can meet. We're going to talk to us about life in this border town, in this noisy border town.
Yeah.
Hello, my name is Gene Hanratty, chairman of Cross Madeleine Rangers Club. We're sitting here at the back of our stand in the main field.
And Gene, you can actually see from where we're sitting, you can see the kind of hilltops over there, which I guess is probably... The border's not too far away from here.
Well, the border's just over a mile away. No matter which road you go, there's 5 roads leaving across McGlen, and 3 of them head across the border.
And the other thing you can see from the stand, this famous football pitch, or Cross McGlen, one of the most famous Gaelic football teams in Ireland, which is a very, you know, indigenous Irish sport. But you can also see what is a very large army barracks, a British army base, which is, you know, quite imposing. It's got walls, must be 15, 20 feet high. And could you tell us a bit about that?
Well, it looks imposing now, but obviously during the Troubles, It was much bigger and they took over much more ground. Took a lot of ground from the club. Took part of the actual football pitch. Used the pitch as a landing area for helicopters.
So you have helicopters just landing on this football pitch in front of us?
Yes, during games, during training. Didn't matter. Whenever it suited the British Army, they landed. You know.
And how has life changed for Cross Magdalen, for the football team, since 1998, since the peace agreement?
Well, there's massive changes. I mean, obviously you can see we got some of our land back. But the simple things like going to games. I mean, when I was playing underage, even maybe under 14, you were going on a bus, you were stopped by the army, the whole bus searched, you were late for your games, late getting home. That was just a simple day-to-day problems. That's stopped now. I mean, there's no British army here.
And is there people concerned here about what Brexit might mean, you know, how, if you end up at a border out in any of these kind of roads that you can see in front of you?
Well, the border is not going to be a new thing. I mean, 100 years we've a border here. And the border goes right through our parish. The physical border has disappeared, but we still haven't got a United Ireland. There's still a border.
Well, we're here at the end of our journey, finally, Peter. Some 500 kilometres later, we started in Derry and we've moved all the way along to the opposite coast. We're here in Carlingford Lough in the beautiful village of O'Meath, which looks across the water to the first town in Northern Ireland of Warren Point. It's a stunningly beautiful place and it's a contemplative place. It's making me think of our journey and all that we've learned. What's, I suppose, the big things that you would take away from it?
I guess the first thing I really felt was almost everywhere I went in the border counties, people don't want to go back to the borders of the past. They don't want the customs checks. They don't want the security posts that have been there for decades and decades during the Troubles and that only really ended 20 years ago. But the other thing I felt as well when we talked to people and stopped and all these little villages was, like, the border region of Ireland, it's the poorest region in the country, and a lot of people, I think, feel very marginalised. They're very far from power, whether that's Dublin, London, or the European community in Brussels.
It also raised a really interesting point from both unionist and nationalist views across the region when we travelled, is that actually reunification now is a conversation that is being had, is worth having, and people want to actually engage with it. It's not just a radical view anymore. It makes economic sense. It's a conversation that's changing because I think the people of Northern Ireland realise that the best persons to guide them are themselves.
Borderlands, Ireland in the Shadow of Brexit, was produced by John Connell and Peter Gagan. The sound engineer was Angie Grant. The supervising producer was Michelle Rayner. And if you've got a story idea for Earshot or our sister program, The History Listen, then now's the time to get in touch. Head to our website and look for Pitch Your Story. I'm Miyuki Okiranta. This is Earshot, and I'll catch you next time.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.